And it's recording. Chairperson, the rest of the other points, they are technical in nature, and we would like to move on to clause 2. Again, it's a related matter to the one that we just talked about. On page 17, in line 46, as well as line 7, we talk about the degree of consanguinity, and a lot of commentators indicated that we have broadened the degree of consanguinity, and that might have unintended consequences, and that perhaps we should reduce the degree of consanguinity from 3 to 2. So we have, we are therefore seeking to do exactly that, to reduce the degree of consanguinity from 3 to 2. The next issue is clause 5. Chairperson, in clause 5, on page 20, line 1, we seek to insert the term Bank Act. You will note that there is a list of legislation at the bottom of page 19, which we are saying that if it is to the extent that it is impossible to apply or comply with one of the inconsistent provisions of another legislation that contravenes the second, it should be that should apply. However, in any applicable provisions of those listed legislation, the provisions of those pieces of legislation will prevail in the case of an inconsistency. So, in other words, if there is an inconsistency between this act and the Auditing Profession Act or the Labour Relations Act or the Promotion of Access to Information and so forth and so on, we are saying those pieces of legislation that are listed there, to the extent that there is an inconsistency in a provision, the provision in this legislation should prevail over this bill, because the company's bill is the bill or the legislation of the classification, whereas the particular pieces of legislation here will be dealing with specific issues. For instance, the Auditing Profession Act will deal particularly with the conduct of auditors, and therefore, if there is any inconsistency between the company and the Auditing Profession, then the Auditing Profession should prevail. So we are seeking to set the Bank Act to the list of legislation, recognizing the fact that there are certain stringent measures or stringent requirements in the Bank Act which probably should prevail over the provisions of the company bill. Clause 6 is technical and simplistic to align the Act with the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. Clause 7, Chair, you will recall that there was a lot of discussion around the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and that companies should human rights. Chair, we are proposing to insert a clause on page 22, after line 17. This is the purpose of the Act, and we want to say that one of the purposes of the Act is to promote compliance with the Bill of Rights as provided for in the Constitution in the application of company law. The next principal issue is under clause 12. Clause 12 on page 25, in line 17. A person may reserve one or more names to be used at a later time, either for a new incorporated company or as an amendment to the name of an existing company by filing an application together with the prescribed fee. Chair, the issue here is that we did not in the bill provide for the application of defensive name, as is currently the case. Currently, people may apply for defensive name, but the bill has omitted that, so we are therefore seeking to reinstate that right for people to apply for the use of defensive name. And then, obviously, on page 26, after line 19, we are providing for the registration of those names, that is defensive names, for a period of 2 years, or for a renewal for another period of 2 years for the registration of defensive names. The next issue is under clause 23. On page 33, in line 6, the issue here is that we are providing for the registration of external company. However, the implication is that a company must comply with all the requirements under subsection 2, that is the requirement from A to H. In other words, the company must comply with all those conditions before it can register. And that is that was unintended, because the idea is to ensure that a company must comply with at least one of those conditions and not all of them. In other words, the company must satisfy all of the requirements before it registers. It must satisfy at least one of the conditions for it. on page 33 in line 18 to insert the entering into contract of employment. In other words, if a company enters into a, if a foreign company enters into a contract of employment, then it must register. Clause 24 again is alignment with the electronic communications and transactions. Chairperson, the next principal issue is on the clause 30, annual financial statement. Now, if you look at subsection 4 on page 37, it says if a company is required to prepare annual financial statements by or in terms of this act or any other national legislation, those statements must A, be audited in the case of a public company, or B, in the case of any other company, be audited what required by the regulation made in terms of subsection 10. Now, the issue was this leaves a lot of discretion to the minister to decide under what conditions or criteria companies should be audited. And therefore, we are seeking to insert some criteria, and it will read like, be audited if so required by the regulation meant in terms of subsection 10, taking into account whether it is desirable in the public interest, having regard to the economic or social significance of the company, as indicated by AA, annual turnover, BB, the size of its records, or CC, the nature and extent of its activities. So the issue here is that we are providing criteria for the minister to require some private companies to have their annual financial statements, and that criteria will be taking into account the public interest, the annual turnover of the company, the size of its workforce, the nature and extent of its activities. The next issue is clause under clause 31. Access to financial statements or related information. And you will recall that in this presentation, Labour indicated that one of the challenges that they face, or that they would face under a business review process, would be access to company information, particularly annual financial statements. And we made a concession that perhaps they could get access to such information under their strict conditions. So therefore, this concession or this proposal seeks to deal with that particular issue. Therefore, we seek to insert, after line 7, this clause that says trade unions must, through the commission and under conditions as determined by the commission, be given access to company financial statements for purposes of initiating a business chair enclosed 32, that again was an omission from our side in terms of current practice. And that is the fact that when a company uses correspondence or contact with the outside world through notices, letters, and the like, it should have its name and registration number visible on that particular type of correspondence, so that it's very easy to identify who is actually issuing that particular correspondence, or who the third party is transacting with. So therefore, we are inserting proposing to insert a clause that says every company must have its name and registration number mentioned in legal characters in all notices and other official publications of the company, including such notices and publications in electronic format as contemplated in the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, and in all bills of exchange, promissory notes, checks, and orders for money or goods, and in all letters, delivery notes, invoices, receipts, and letters of credit of the company. So this is for purposes of ensuring that the identity of the company is disclosed when interacting with third parties. The identity will attend to the number of issues. Chairperson, the rest of the following issues all technical in nature. We are simply making corrections. Perhaps with the exception of clause 39. Clause 39 on page 43 in line 16, preemptive rights to be offered and subscribed shares. We seek to omit in line 16 preemptive right to be offered and subscribed to shares. It actually be heading and substitute it with subscription of shares. That's a correction to the heading. That might be subscription of shares. The rest technical. The next issue there is under clause 56. Individual or
therefore, what we are seeking to do here is to ensure that if you are holding shares on behalf of someone, you must disclose who that individual is. So, therefore, C says you must disclose the identity of each person with a beneficial interest in the security held by that person. In other words, if I'm holding shares on behalf of my colleague McDonald, I should be in a position to disclose who the beneficial interest for that is.
I can better understand.
Can you explain to us in what the doctor, in how much the doctor is that to the man? Will you share it with how or how it was? Because it is a problem that has been raised time and time and again.
Thank you. The section 56, or clause 56, will deal with the disclosure in general of shares of our beneficiary on behalf of other people. It's common practice in South Africa and worldwide that there are nominee companies, to just name a few, UK Barclays nominees, Standard Bank nominees. They hold shares on behalf of a variety of people, of their customers. This clause will force them to disclose to the company if who the beneficial shareholders are. It's also practice that there are many reasons for using nominees. Cost is one of them. If you can lessen the transactions that are needed to take to be done for shareholders, you reduce a lot of the cost in share investment. So it's a very useful tool to make use of the nominee company. But it also it leads to problems for the company because they are not in a position to identify the people who they are actually are the shareholders. So this section will, it's a section that's also contained in the current Companies Act, which works quite well, and companies can force any person who they believe do not hold their shares in their personal name to disclose the beneficial shareholder of their own. So it's basically an instrument to provide the company with the information it actually needs about its shareholder.
How would the lending department be able to enforce the provision that government? Because the other said that it is the company that will enforce that an individual must prove that he's sending for some other people or some other company. But with regard to enforcement by government, can you explain that?
Chair, the principal intention of this clause or this section is not to provide government with a tool, it's to provide a company with a tool to find out who the actual shareholders is or are. The government, on the other hand, has got extended investigative powers under this new law, in terms of which it can also make use of those powers to determine a beneficial shareholding, should it be necessary for government to be able to find out what a beneficial shareholding in a particular case is. But as I say, the intention of this section is to provide a useful tool to the company, and it will be enforced between the company and beneficial shareholders, or nominee shareholders for that matter. But the government will not be able to use this specific tool, but it has other tools, as I say, in terms of its wide powers to investigate the affairs of companies.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next issue is under.
Guess, before you continue, if I understand the intention of the question, this question, you might have continued, but there is just something still lingering in my mind. With my limited knowledge of shareholding in companies, I seem to think that I might obtain or buy shares in a company for 100,000. And then somebody else might have given me 50,000 to say acquire those shares on my behalf. So the transaction record will have two amounts of selling 100 shares there, or shares worth 100,000. So what this seeks to do, what you are doing here now, is that companies, their shareholding structure, here I speak under correction. It's a company trading public. It's public knowledge. So somebody will be able to say that who is the beneficiary of the 100,000 shares that Martin is currently holding. Then disclosure would reveal that I'm actually holding 50,000 in my own name. And the other 50,000 I'm holding on behalf of that has made. This is what we are doing. So, in legal terms, is that piercing of the corporate veil, or the veil where you look behind, who's hiding behind
them? Yes, thank you. Now, this is not genuine, the piercing of the veil, this is piercing of the of the security umbrella to make sure that you can find out who's underneath the umbrella. It's very important that for a company from time to time to know who's under its shares, because it, cases of hostile takeovers and all that type of thing, a company would like to know who owns its shares and who are its majority shares, and if they will be able to pass them in a solution. And, it is intended specifically for the purpose that you were describing now.
Thank you, sir. I see Mr. Hassan is smiling, so we are reading from one page.
No, thanks. I'm just wanting to clarify the issue which you raised, the issue of the keeping of the corporate space. Here the answer to the other question is what you are dealing with here. But keeping of the corporate space, just for clarity, is when people will deal with it when we come to another session later now. But in short, it means that people have maybe been abusing the juridic person, hiding under the juridic person, in so much that therefore we piece the corporate veil and go and hold life with the individual people who would have been so that is piecing of the corporate veil.
And by juristic person, we are referring to a company cannot have a juristic personality. So in that case, I think it was
when you look at the books, the company supposedly not doing so well, but the people concerned are driving a Lamborghini on Sunday and a Porsche on Monday. So these things help us to look at what happened behind that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next issue is on the floor 61. And this matter really relates to shareholder protection or the promotion of shareholder activity. In line 40, we say that a shareholder may call for a shareholder meeting or may demand that a shareholder meeting be held, but that such demand should be supported by at least 25% of the voting rights that can be exercised. Now, there was a concern that this threshold is probably too high and that it would be difficult for a shareholder to garner support if you put the pitching at 25% of voting
right.
So therefore we are proposing to reduce it to 10%. In other words, a shareholder may request or may demand a shareholder meeting, and if that demand is supported by at least 10% of the voting interest, then the meeting should be held.
Still have a question?
Yes. I think one of the problems we face in South Africa in general is settled shareholders. No shareholder activists. Not in South Africa. And if the article of the country and the company and the shareholders to be more active in
thank you, Mr. Lascani. That has been followed by Mr. Kuno.
Yes, Chair, we know that the legacy is intense. Shareholder activity, particularly in attendance. But
Tata Natsuji, thank you. Everything, I see you still want to speak, Mr. Lapatania, and indulge you there.
Thank you, Chester, for being here. I was there at the breakfast lunch of the women's program. And my story. Chesterton, I think my point relates to Clause 58. It's between both Clause 58 and 61 that we're talking about. Just think, I hope I'm not speaking out loud. There are shares that have been given to me in, you know, Vodacom, MTN, Sasol, and you find that it's hundreds of people that have paid.
Thousands
of people, thank you so much, Oliver, that have bought those shares. Just asking myself, when it comes to meeting, obviously, some votes that they have not even nominated or elected to be the director for those whatever, is sitting down there making decisions on their behalf. So when I'm sitting down for just a second, I hope I'm not out of order. Okay. I'm just asking myself, when you talk about shareholder activism, how can those people's ideas be taken into consideration? This is, you know, each and every 2 months, this is happening in schools for black people to own shares in different companies. But I'm asking myself, who's going to be their voice? Somebody out there will be taking decisions on their behalf. So this 25% does it also include them or one? And the process that you talked about at Clause 51, 58.
Mr. Lamaskasmi, I will indulge you before I make a decision.
The thing is, there are stringent conditions for all of them. There are stringent conditions, you know, it's subject to Section 506. And you must call, and your demand must be specified. It's not just a case of SL meeting. And again, the point is, we're now having large numbers of shareholders. So therefore, you're shoveling with discipline. So therefore, it's more difficult to get the 10%. You know, we're now in the bargain, we'll make the 7.5. That's the difference. But it just improves the chance. You know, it was just, you know, I remember years ago, one of the big things that caused a lot of corporations to withdraw from South Africa in apartheid, okay, was shareholder activism in big corporates, where they took the companies to task. But it didn't require 25-10% of General Motors to pay. And we're facing today challenges of environment, public, other public issues. So I'm just making it easier. It doesn't mean what's called for is going to be decided, accepted, or so forth, but it just creates an opportunity for more ordinary people to be heard, to call them. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
Thank you, Mr. Lapatania. If I may, one of the gender policy issue where government seeks to encourage black people in particular to buy shares in some of these partially state-owned activities or where the state has stake in. Obviously, the idea is to get more and more people to buy into shares as a form of savings and generating income for themselves. I must just say that in regard to the first one, I think that was Telkom. Not many people were wise to the issue of shares, but says that if that there has been applied for 2,000 shares, because of the number of people who applied for shares, you would not necessarily be able to get the 2,000 shares that he has applied. So we have to accommodate the number of the people who have applied. They take obviously for physically challenged women and then men. So I would say that in regard to that, those share offers have been doing exceptionally well. And then them having bought into this, this is where the shareholder activism and knowledge becomes important. For them to be able to read the prospectus of what this Media 24, how well it has done, and then for them to get involved in the activities of the company. It's only by getting involved that, that they will now be able to have a say. Every year or two, there are forms sent out for all shareholders to nominate directors in the company, so they will be able to participate in those activities. But I also think that it still remains the responsibility of the DTI at a different level to seek to find ways to better educate people who have recently acquired shares as to their rights and how they must get involved in the activities and the general welfare and value of the company. So right now I'm not answering your question directly, but I'm just saying that it's only now that people have entered that area, and then it's the responsibility of everybody to get involved. Department, you have read the comments of members and the questions, put your opportunity for a rejoinder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think they are very valid comments that have been raised. But maybe if I can start by the last comment that you made. Shareholder activism is high on the agenda of the department, that is promotion of shareholder activism. And it's one of the projects that we have actually earmarked soon after the adoption of this bill, that the department must go on roadshow, hold workshops to educate people around shareholder activism. So it's something that is quite critical for us, because in order for this bill to work, you need shareholders that are active, you need shareholders who will hold director companies accountable. So without that activity, it's going to be very difficult to make this bill possible. So it's something that we have project that is going to be on the DTI's radar screen. Chair, which also probably goes to Honorable Kuno's comment. And what we are seeking to do really here is to ensure that it's easy for people to attend or to call for shareholder meetings. And the important thing really is that those people must attend shareholder meetings. I think the comment that was made by Honorable Parkman is very, very important. This session only deals with a demand or a request for a meeting. But what is critical is that people must be present in that particular meeting. And the threshold also gives you an idea or the gauge of whether people will attend the meeting. Now, if you pitch it at a very low level, it doesn't really assist you in gauging that appetite. Because if we say at least 10% of the voting interest must support the demand, then you get that 10%. It gives you an idea of the appetite for that meeting. But if you pick it at a very low percentage, it really doesn't act as a gauge for you. However, as much as it may, I think concern is covered in subsection 4, which says that memorandum of incorporation may actually prescribe a lower percentage than what is provided for under subsection 3. So, whereas we are saying 10% of the voting. think the concern is covered by that condition. And the only condition really to demand anything is that you must indicate support for that meeting, and then you must have that 10%. Those are the only two conditions. Purpose for the meeting and at least 10% support. If the company feels that it needs a lower threshold, it can do so through the
okay.
No, I take the point, you know, what you do,
and in the form of the company, particularly with your big public company, is that a few people have lost the shares. There is really no place for the average ordinary shareholder to be involved. You know, you take big corporation, Old Mutual owns 4 or 5 insurance companies own 80-90% of company A. So really four guys control a big corporation. We're now trying to get more interest in the corporate world in company. So we have these big shareholders. You know, if 5 guys own 10 people own 100,000 shares each, 1 million shares in the company. Now we are trying to bring the public more into shareholders with these big shareholders. Now suddenly you've got 1 million shares that might be owned by 200 different people owning a number of shares. It's still a lot of people. With the spread of social media, to get 10%, you might have to get out of 100,000 people, 20,000 people, before you get your 10% in a big company, the public company. You see, 10%, what would 10% be of social? How many shareholders would you need to get your 10%? You know? 20,000 before they can ask for me. And most shareholders are passive. And to say that you can earn, it sounds very nice. The company's memo of incorporation is very dry. Usually companies would be happier, most probably to raise the threshold to about 60% of their life, because less people, less members, or less shareholders is, you know, cause less problems. But as we are now trying to spread this so widely, isn't under these new big share schemes and so forth making it more difficult? Because now you have more shareholders that are involved in your threshold. Yes, that's just the point. So we are not ready to encourage, all we really is to make the provision for activism. Thank you.
Thanks, Captain. You know, the explanation that you're just giving now of the activism and more people attending the meeting, I'm just sitting here and asking myself, what is the reason of going from 25 to 10%? Maybe you could explain that, because I really agree with you that if we say people have to take more part in meetings and know exactly what assets are doing for them, they need to be part of the meeting. So I need to understand why from 25 to 10. You know, 5% is even lower. Yeah, thanks. But I need to understand the thank you, Ken.
Moving from 25 to 10 was to make it easier to convene the meeting. 25 requires a greater number of people. 10% requires a lesser number to call for the meeting. So what Mr. Lascarini proposes is to decrease it from 10 to 5. Comrade Cousin?
Yes.
Gentlemen, please speak into your mic.
Yeah, have an interest, one has to know other shareholders who have this voting right, so that when they go about the business, can be able to go the other to a certain extent. Not that I'll sit there with few others and then decide things. On behalf of so many people that are illustrated by Mr. Kassim, you know. But I should share with the interest as well, you know, from the shareholders of activism, you know, of being active participation. So we have to actually work very hard, you know, to know at least even more than 10% itself, you know, 20%, because you would actually be involved in attending meetings if you have a voting right. So I have to say, you know, to highlight this point, you know, that it doesn't talk about any shareholder, but it talks specifically about shareholders who voting rights. If I have left over to be.
Seeing that it's raining, I think that I'm in a rather extra good mood. I'll allow you, Ms. Labaskahi, but I don't want you to go down to a debate between you and Mr. Hassan.
I never realized I have much of a democratic government.
You know, all we are talking about yet is just to call a meeting. The decisions of the meeting are not strictly. It's just for people to say we'd like a meeting for specific purposes. What's decided will be decided by the opposition majority shareholders. It's just to call a meeting.
May I have input from the department? We have heard members playing at Wimbledon. The ball is going to and fro.
Thank you very much. I think the distinction that has been made by Honorable Hartman is very important, because we are not talking number of shareholders. We are talking the percentage of voting rights. So that's a very important distinction, because it's possible that 10% can actually be accounted for by two or three shareholders, but their voting rights can constitute about 10%. So we're not talking numbers of shareholders to say you're going to be 10,000 shareholders. No, we're talking about the percentage of voting rights that can be provided at a particular meeting. And that, if you look at it from that perspective, 10% is actually very low. It's a very low threshold to meet. Remember that we actually had peace. 25. Now we come down from 25 to 10, and we think that that's a threshold that can easily be met. But I thought that the distinction between the number of shareholders as opposed to the percentage of voting rights is a very important distinction to make. And we are talking about the letter.
Chair, thank you. Yes, I think what you said about the threshold is quite true. Mr. Kubanga gave a well put exposition of the fact that it is a threshold for voting rights. One last remark that I would like to make regarding the proxies that were part of this debate, and one should always remember the proxy is a very powerful tool in the hands of minority shareholders to decide matters on meetings, where they can unite their votes into a certain person who they can give proxy to attend a meeting on their behalf. So they can either use the tool of a proxy you will have a lot of more active shareholders participating in company meetings. And this is why the proxy is a very important issue, and people should be properly educated on the use of proxies, especially minority shareholders, as we keep getting now the number of EEE transactions that is on the way and going.
And Chairperson, I think you probably responded to Honorable Kunal's question as to why are we moving from 10% to 10%. It's basically to make it easy for companies to hold shareholder meetings. However, I think we still want to emphasize the fact that education, awareness, raising is going to be critical to encourage people to attend meetings, to participate, to speak at those meetings. It's going to take time because more and more people are now subscribing, to company shares. But it's going to take a lot of education and awareness raising on the part of the department and other stakeholders, of course. Say what are your rights as a shareholder? How do you participate in the shareholder meeting? What is it that you may or may not do? So those things are very critical, and as I indicated, it's quite an important project for the department to ensure that we go out there and talk to people, we educate them, so that when they attend the meeting, they know exactly what is expected of them or what they're doing.
Thanks. Can we move?
The next.
I don't want to delay the process. Have we now reached consensus of 10%?
The next issue is Amendment 63 on page 61. We are substituting clauses 4 and 5 with what appears on the document. If you look at clause 5, it's sort of to say that if somebody abstains from voting, then that voting is taken as a vote against a particular resolution. And we thought that perhaps that was not, that wouldn't be correct. And therefore, we are substituting clauses 4 and 5. In clause 4, sub clause 4, it's the question of clarifying the issue there that any person present and entitled to exercise voting rights must, on a show of hands, have only one vote, irrespective of the number of shares he or she holds or represents. And then sub clause 5 is actually voting by interest. In other words, sub clause 4 is voting by show of hands, individual vote, and sub clause 5 is voting by voting interest.
The current clause, sub clause 4, says voting shall be exercised by the people present in the meeting. And the proposal is they are entitled to do that. What is the difference? But the other question on subsection 4. When you say only one vote, maybe one vote per agenda, one vote per item in the agenda, or per resolution in the agenda, but it's not explicit here to say when we open a meeting, you have only one vote for the rest of this agenda. So when we close this meeting and we vote at once, you can't go to other items of the meeting. Thank you.
Chair, may I respond? The current provision in the poll only makes provision for polling. for quick resolution to be passed by a show of hands. So if the meeting decides that this resolution needs to be passed by a show of hands, and nobody demands a poll, it can go with a single vote of the person present. If a person demands a poll, then the votes will be brought out according to the number of shares. You'll have one vote per share to be exercised in under a polling situation. So if you hold 100 shares, you will cast 100 votes with your ballot paper. And that is a difference. And it's general practice that the voting as described here is not per meeting, it's per issue that is decided at the meeting. You can vote 100 times your 100 shares or your single vote if there are 100 resolutions to be passed at the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for clarifying that point. You may move.
Clause 5 on page 63. Line 30. A company's memorandum of incorporation may require a higher percentage of voting rights to approve an ordinary resolution. We seek to instead accept for an ordinary resolution for the members of the director under section 71. The intention here is to allow a company's memorandum of incorporation to prescribe a higher percentage for an ordinary resolution, which is currently 50 percent of the voting rights. However, we are saying that when it comes to the removal of a director, that ordinary resolution threshold should not be increased. In other words, we don't want to make it difficult for shareholders to remove directors, because if you pitch your ordinary resolution percentage, say for instance at 60%, you may make it difficult for shareholders to remove directors. So we are saying, yes, an ordinary resolution may be increased from 51 to 60, but that must not be done for the removal of a director. In any other circumstance, yes, you may do it, but when it comes to the removal of a director, you may not increase that threshold. Chair, under clause 69, subsection 8B, Roman figure 4. A person is qualified to be a director of a company if sub-4 has been convicted in the Republic or elsewhere and imprisoned without the option of a fine or fined more than a certain amount for death, fraud, forgery, perjury, or an offense. LCC. Can you utilize your mic, please?
Thanks, Chair. I'm trying to follow, but he said 69, I'm looking at 69, and what he's talking about is not there. So I see.
Could you just kindly ensure that she's going to just give her the reference?
Sorry, my apologies, Chair. Under 69, subsection A, that will be line 43, page 65. The sentence starting with a person is qualified to be a director of a company if
regard to B4, if that person has been convicted in the public or elsewhere and imprisoned without the option of a fine, or fined more than a prescribed amount for theft, fraud, forgery, perjury, or an offense, then we skip to CC, an offense under this Act, the Close Corporation Act, Financial Interest and Center Act, Security Services Act. Now we are proposing to insert under that list Insolvency Act and the Competition Act. Chair, you will recall that in our deliberation on the Competition Amendment Bill, we indicated that one of the issues that we wanted to include was the disqualification of the director on the basis that they have been involved in price fixing or cartel behavior. In addition to personal liability, in terms of holding a director criminally liable under the Commission Act, we also say that the company bill will also make that person a disqualified director. So we are seeking to introduce that issue here by the Commission Act as well as the Insolvency Act. Chair, the next issue under clause 72, and it deals primarily with the proposal for a social and ethics committee. You will recall that we had extensive discussions around this issue of a social and ethics committee. We are therefore proposing to add under clause 72 after line 47 to have a subsection 4 after line 47 subsection 4 which will read that the minister may by regulation prescribe that a company or a category of companies must have a social and ethics committee if it is desirable in the public interest, having regard to its annual turnover, the size of its workforce, or the nature and extent of its activities. Chair, so you will recall that we had actually indicated that we recognize the importance of having this committee, but that we wouldn't want to make it compulsory for each and every company. So this provision therefore gives the minister the right to or the discretion to require certain types of companies to establish or to have a social and ethics committee if it is in the public interest to do so, or if the nature of that company taking into account its size, you know, its workforce, its annual turnover, the extent of its activities and the like into account.
I will say Lord Peter. Doesn't see any need to legislate.
The intention of the Social and Ethics Committee is to ensure that a company abides by certain principles which will ensure compliance preferences with environmental activities or the conduct of a company within its community. I think there was a concern that companies seem to disregard their social role, you know, and therefore there is a need to ensure that there is a committee that will hold the company, you know, accountable in terms of ensuring compliance with, you know, social obligations. It's social responsibility activity. And that is in an ethical manner. For instance, if it's involved in mining, you know, does it take into account the community around environmental impact and the like? It's limited to the region.
I'm sure you agree with that type of social determination. On page 74, after line 20, this section deals with the director. In other words, a company may take director's insurance to cover the risk that a director, in discharging of his or her duties, might encounter. However, we seek to instead a clause that says the company may not directly or indirectly pay any fine that may be imposed on the director of the company or of a related company who has been convicted of an offense in terms of any legislation. The intention really is to ensure that the company does not pay any fine on behalf of its director. And this issue also arose under the deliberations of the Commission Amendment Bill, that how do you ensure that a company doesn't pay a fine on behalf of its director who has been found guilty. So this clause makes it an offense for preventing the company from doing a regular. The rest of Clause 38 is again based on the similar principle. If you look at point C, as well as point A, which deals with the indemnification of damages. The rest of the issues Chair, are technical, perhaps until Clause 94. Clause 94, line 42. The idea here is to
say that an audit committee, or rather, yeah, an audit, a person may not serve on an audit committee if that person is an employee of a company. So we are simply removing the word executive in line 42 to say a prescribed officer or full-time employee instead of saying full-time executive employee, removing the word executive so that any employee of the company may not serve on an audit committee. Clause 120. Chair, you will recall that there was a proposal that you should indicate how the agencies that are called in terms of this deal will be funded. Now, we therefore are seeking to include under clause 120 the funding mechanism for the takeover regulation panel, and we say that it will be funded through prescribed fees and levies to be imposed on certain companies.
That is the levy that are charged on listed companies. and this levy is sufficient to fund the security regulations and all currently. It is the intention that similar levies should be investigated to fund the panel when it takes over from a security regulation panel. The Ombud and Council, on the other hand, are two newly created entities with no funding of their own. They will also not charge fees for their services, and they will fall under the auspices of the Department of Trade and Industry and will be funded from their budget. I trust that that will answer the questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. McDonald.
Just to add on the consideration panel, they are allowed currently to impose those levies, and they propose to the minister to say, do you agree or not? The minister may accept or not accept. So the minister is with the financing.
Thank you very much for providing that clarity. I think before we proceed, it might be an ideal time to break for tea now. So we'll break for about 10 minutes. I see Mr. Presley is in the room. I read with interest your article saying that you are particular with whom you take tea. I'm inviting you for tea. I'm not sure if you take tea with me. Thank you, good for me.
Thank you. mar ke ta bona ho sa po se ha ne re di sa ne ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa
ka ho sa bona ho sa
ka ho sa bona
ho sa ka ho
sa bona ho sa ka
ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka
ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa bona ho sa ka ho sa
Welcome back, people. I'm told that an umbrella was found in the gentleman's face. Kindly hold it up, ma'am, so that it can be seen. The person was causing the rain.
Enterprise, right, as a company, we will refer to it as a state-owned company.
Then we also are proposing to make use of the term company tribunal instead of company ombud, because if you look at the functions of an ombud, they are actually not likely to be said in this bill. Alternatively, if you look at the function of the company ombud as expressed in the bill, those are typically functions of the tribunal. So therefore, we are proposing to change the word company ombud to company tribunal. Lastly, Chair, in order to just make a correction where the word secretary appears to specifically talk of the company secretary. Then lastly, the expression supervisor, we are proposing to use the term business rescue practitioner. That will be about it. Thank you, Chair.
satisfied with the hand, we will do it. To give that weapon in the hands of the courts as an option for fight. Thank you.
Dr. Ali. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to hear from the Department of Trade and Industry during the hearing. A number of submissions mentioned the fact that this particular bill, Chair, it is really complicated itself, and it applies to all businesses, small, big, to mega businesses and so forth. I want to know from the Department, will a number of workshops be held to explain the complexity of this particular bill to small to medium enterprise, the fact that the position of directors and business rescue and so forth. I think that we politicians and we here to exercise oversight, but this particular bill has got wide ramifications and so forth, and I'd like to appeal to the department to publish or to make the indications of this particular piece of legislation to the small to medium businesses, especially in the rural areas. Chairman, I think this is very important because, as you say, the sooner they acquaint themselves with the empirical substance of this bill, the better. Thank you, Chair. Chair, is it correct that this bill, that no more feces will be allowed to be formed after this particular bill has been passed by Parliament? Is that true? I'd like to have the legal state of the closed corporation as well. Thank you, Chair.
Let me allow Mr. Taylor if I can add, then you will be able to the DA is very prominent at this particular period in our life, so we'll have to accept that. But anyway, I thought Dr. Rabi was going to bring this point back. We asked that you go back, when you go back, consider the whole question of auditing in the rural areas for the small business person. The reason why we were so passionate about it is that we want to assist in installing discipline into small business. You know, a lot of small businesses are just run, and people make money, and sometimes people take cash out of the till, thinking that money is their money, and then knowing that it belongs to the company. Because there's no real pressure in getting an auditing firm. Now, in a rural town where I come from, there's one auditing firm. Something that myself and Dr. Rabe emphasize is that after 5 years, now the guy or the business person has to get somebody 300-400 kilometers from there. That's my audit the firm. Will it be viable in the circumstances of small business? Will it assist small business in throwing discipline into their business? Last year you said firmly that it should be changed 5 years or could there be exceptional circumstances for business people in those areas? Thank you very much. Because I must say, Chair, some areas in business are almost so remote you can't get them. To get a firm, to get them across, just get them across poor people to cross them with the money. So I hope that the department takes these kind of things into account, because we don't have in the USA or the Brazil where the infrastructure was good defense.
Thank you.
Just add on to Dr. Romney, quite correctly, you know, we've done important to workshops and so forth. But maybe I should make some money myself. You see, the Trade Corporations Act, this is one, was certainly not 200 pages thick. So you had a smaller act, which, you know, you could consult the regulator of CC. Now, in effect, your CC, if we
Schedule 4 of the bill, which is on page 198.
Yes, in answer to the question, what program
we had utterly taken this serious account when this bill was approved. We're hoping that it would have been probably passed right now. And we actually plan, even in our business plan for the financial year 2008-09, that we're going to have to run countrywide what is called company colloquia, which will seek to bring together small, medium, and big business and try to bring them the same thinking that underlies this bill. And actually, we thought that it was designed in such a way that it first determined the level of awareness from small business about company business, and the extent to which they are ready to take, you know, the requirements of this bill into account. But then, because of the obviously performance delays, and we felt that it was best to anticipate the passing of this act, because you don't want to tell people something and then it changes later on. We thought that what we would do rather is to take on board general issues about, shareholder rights, issues that affect them on a daily basis, to the extent that they are also involved both in the old sector and in this current sector. And what we have actually decided eventually is that towards the beginning of the first quarter, the first quarter of next financial year, after we've done all these workshops, when we hope that this act will now be law, we will then, specifically, run aggressive workshops countrywide, which will ensure that as much as possible, the people become aware of what the government, especially with the impending change on migration from total workshops to company. So basically, we were trying to play things by ear, but we still continue as our daily responsibility to run workshops throughout the country of a general nature. But we're also conscious of the fact that we can't, basically use this bill until it is actually done. But we're very conscious of the fact that they need to prepare people out there. In fact, in terms of our business plan, as I said, we'll have a conference next year, but we thought that this conference would rather be preceded by these workshops. Well, as somebody has got to point out, not everybody has got access or understands what is going on in the conference. They tend to be very high level for certain people. But just to refer also to the issue of pamphlets and flyers and so on that were mentioned by the honorable member. We also do issue those things, but perhaps we're not penetrated enough into the country, especially not in the rural areas. We are small so far, but the thing that we're going to be big, we're small in the city of about 40 people. Our education process is directly going around the country as far as possible, talking to SMEs, talking to Saki or Sako will ask people about these things and answer those questions that they can answer. And simultaneously also distributing some pamphlets first about the office, what it does, and also about issues like funding, shareholder rights, so on and so forth. But as I say, the administration has not been as wise as we'd like to be so far. I don't know if I come close to this point.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McDonald?
No, thanks. I'm attempting to answer the question whether this deal will apply to the closed corporation. There was that question. Yeah, the answer in the affirmative is to say yes. What we are saying is that let us assume that this deal is passed today. Essentially, it becomes law today, and it is implementable in phase today. Those closed corporations which are in the system now can continue. The fact here is that
However, if I want to register a debt corporation tomorrow, I will have to be regulated by the CBA. And I hope I'm a good teacher. So that is just to answer the issue of whether this is a bank, a deal, or act. I think it has been answered by my colleagues to say that the education and guides and the like. So I just wanted to make that distinction. There was the issue of possible quotation of the same option with an idea. We're dancing on a thin ice. This is treated as a property. As opposed to shares. A property. It may be a landed property or intellectual property, but it's a property. So the issue would be it may be unconstitutional to use this beer to restrict the property of. But maybe the state of advice that we also talk to that issue. So I just wanted to indicate the reality that we understand the problem. However, the answer is okay, it may have some constitutional implications. But as the state law advice that we want to talk to this issue.
Thank you. I don't have much to add to Mr. McDonald, basically, but if we are dealing with property rights and entering into this industry, basically, so just be cautious. Thank you, Chair.
I hear the workshop that you do workshopping companies under general. But what is most important is that the people at the commission, they need to know this legislation very well. You know, I'm talking about the Trends Act. The implementation thereof is a problem. There are people in those offices who don't still understand what is stipulated in the act. And I hope that as we be workshopping other people, the commission itself, the people who be dealing with this each and every day, they need to read this thing and understand it so that when we ask questions, when the public asks questions, they'll be able to answer. And people won't wait forever for answers because those people, they cannot get answers because they don't understand it themselves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Congressman Kennedy. Next was Congressman Sita, followed by Congressman
Kennedy. Yes, I suppose I'm up now. There's a cut-off area that I'm going to look at for questions and also the remind of the things that have not been responded to.
Can you adjust your mic a little? Sorry. Yes, maybe that is comfortable with the stretching to hear properly. Okay, sure. With regard to clause 5, there is a number of acts that are listed there. In understanding that the law is very strange, because if you list the act, then that's where the statute would be applicable. The question I had was, what is the criteria for choice of those acts?
Chair, I think also it's needed to commend the department to take into account the shifting of the criteria for ensuring that the external companies are registered. So that will help a lot, just as a comment from the strict arrangement that was there, but to the one that doesn't allow flexibility. However, just a question around the petition that has put in, which is inclusion of contract of employment. Would that include consultants or any service service? I don't necessarily depend on someone, you know, employ someone, keep someone just as a consultant. The inspection that the first day is an amount of 100 grand. That's what we think. Would that activate the recover cost? 100 plus the buying power is getting eroded day in, day out. On close 80, was that inclusion quite a commented test, rather. Just on CC, some of it, which is one of the three areas that we looked into. First one is annual cap oversight of the workforce. And the last one, the nature and extent of the activities of the company. Would that include the impact of the company on the product of the socio-economic environment? Same applies to 72. But just as the next problem here, I think someone happened on the issue of compliance and promotion of human rights. I think the inclusion of social and fiscal is highly commended. Of course, taking into account that the minister would have to apply or have the right to do so. The last one was in the document is the one on supervisor. The Peter has never supervised for 6 months in a fixed. What indicated there is that prediction about what I had from the respondent, you are saying that it's actually business practice prediction. So the full word is going to be business practice prediction. It doesn't define all sentences. Reference date means 10-year sentence within the text. So that means that that's the mode within which the kind of transfer the act covers. Maybe a group question is what if there would be a transgression that would warrant a deeper sentence? Something that is outside the X. It limits, you know, X limits the sentence to 10 years. I'm sorry. I didn't check what came to you. And also the future of those corporations. I thought you just said that once this X kicks in, those corporations can exist for only 10 years. Indefinitely. Now, Chair, I think in the past, I raised the issue of financial statements
very, very strongly. Excluding the automatic one, but just a general way, a general way of sustainability. And I'm the impression that I got was that the department would take a look into that, but I may have missed how they articulated the incorporation of obliging personalized companies to address the management of fire financial statement or the inclusion of compliance thereto. The other area which I meant was the determination of personal interest. I gave a piece of paper that wouldn't it be helpful to just articulate what has to be taken into account when the best interest of a company then came to my mind that would it certainly provide the top of enforcing the regulations on criminal numbers that come on. The aim is to enhance the profit proactive approach of preemptive measures, particularly against illegal business activities, to ensure that this, as much as possible, these criminal unregistered entities are registered. Last but not least, Chair. Once again, I've had a look at the presentation of submission by CIFA and combined by previous input. I take cognizance that TTI has made a very good incorporation around taking into account the deal of price, which is very helpful. But I just went through the submission again, and I'd like to test the TTI's opinion just on two areas. I have a gentleman in the past that I was just quoting. The first area is a proposed addition to 15.6, which will become 15.16. Yeah, I can just make sure that I read it in full. It would read as follows: the proposed edition. A company's memorandum of incorporation and any rules of the company are binding between the company and any person. To the extent that the company violates its obligation in terms of the bill of rights. The binding between the company and any person to the extent that the company violates its obligation in terms of the bill of rights. That's the first one. The second one, Chair, is 76.3. Then it could read as follows, subject to subsection 4 and 5, a director of a company when acting in that capacity must exercise the power to perform the functions of a director.
take reasonable precautions to ensure the company's activities, whether it's a task officer or that of a subsidiary or subcontractor, whether in South Africa or beyond the border, do not violate the rights of persons contained in the Bill of Rights, that the common means obligation to the extent of capability to respect, promote, protect, and fulfill the same rights. Other checking, please go through the others that feel that they are catered for that by the introduction that has been brought in for TCI. Now, okay, one of the things that comes out is that I strongly and concur with the fact that the emphasis is on promotion going beyond compliance. The company must think also to be part of the effort to promote human rights. And also, another area is actually to see that the Bill of Rights goes beyond actually imposing obligations, but becomes part of a regime that changes the very nature of commerce. And I think quite a number of people are new to that, or in fact, changing the nature of commerce, corporate governance, capital conduct, and such. And I suggest this to as part of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Jennings?
Yeah, I'll be. I just want to draw, before I take over the ground of attention again, to the question of the protection of borders. While I accept what you're saying, and I understand, and all of us understand what you're trying to say here, the average person out there, when they have to interpret this law, will understand because it doesn't reflect what you have to say in that clause where it speaks about protection of borders. If you can just somehow make provisions so that the average can understand the implications of that.
Thank you. The department, your chance to respond. I must just say, members, it makes our job easier when we deal with a particular clause and we make input. And then I also agree that it's possible to come back to issues that you may have overlooked, but it can't be correct for each and every clause. You also have the benefit of your peers when we make our comments, when we deal with a particular clause, and then we move to the next clause, make our life easier. This is just for future. We are still coming back here on Tuesday with regard to the consumer protection. Department's comments.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We will try to deal with the issue that the question raised. The first issue relates to Section 5 of the Act on the criteria used. The criteria used for the choice of the legislation that is listed under Section 5. Basically, the criteria is that this bill deals with particular issues that may be dealt with in other legislation. For instance, we deal with issues of auditing in this bill. But you have an auditing profession act which deals with the conduct of auditors and so forth. Now we are saying that to the extent that there are inconsistencies between this bill in dealing with issues of auditing and the auditing profession act, dealing with issues of regulating the conduct of auditors, then that deal with the conduct of auditors must prevail, because it's a specialist type of legislation dealing with the conduct of auditors. Whereas here, we're only touching on the part of auditing. Similarly, if this bill talks to the rights of employees and so forth, it may not reduce those rights as contained in the Labour Relations Act. And therefore, the Labour Relations Act must prevail to the extent that this bill tries to deal with the rights of employees in a manner that will conflict with the Labour Relations Act. Similarly, promotion of access to information. This bill does promote access to information, but it may not do so in a manner that conflicts with an act that specifically deals with promotion of access to information in general. So that's the criteria that we have used. We have proposed to include the Banks Act because there are issues that are dealt with in the Banks Act. For instance, when it comes to the appointment of auditors, which are much more similar than what is provided for in this bill, because this is a bill of general application. But then, because of their nature, because of systemic reasons, because of all those things, they may provide certain requirements which may not be, or rather that may be much more, that may be of a higher standard than what is provided for in this bill. And therefore we are saying those provisions must prevail. So that is the criteria. The second issue is around contract of employment and as a requirement for a foreign company to register, and whether that includes consultancy contract. Chair, I'll probably request one of the team members to respond to that. I'm not quite familiar with the Labour Relations Act and what it treats as a contract of employment, whether consultancy contracts are regarded as employment contracts, so I'd like one of the team members to respond.
The Labour Relations Act does not regard as a consultant, what is referred to as independent contractor, as employees of the company. Therefore, if the consultant does not have a relationship with the company in terms of being an employee, it will not be an employment contract, it will be a contract between different parties. So it will not fall under the particular category in terms of the definition of an employee in terms of the Labour Relations Act. I do not have a legal relationship.
The sixth place is a bit of a social responsibility on companies to discuss.
disclose their members' registers to any interested party. And I don't think the fee is really intended to compensate the company, but it's more intended not to, to, or to discourage frivolous requests for information.
Chair, the next issue relates to clause 30 and whether on point 2, whether sub CC, which says the nature and extent of its activities, whether it includes the impact of the company on the broader socio-economic environment. Chair, it's exactly the intention of that. 10, the nature and extent of its activities. It's the intention of that 10 to cover the impact of the company's activities on the broader socio-economic environment. And that will also cover clause 72. So in other words, the nature of or the extent of the company's activity will be a determining factor in terms of whether the minister may require that company to have statements audited, or whether it should have an ethics or a social ethics committee. The next question was whether the term practitioner should be used in full, that is to say, business rescue petition. I think that is the intention, and to make that explicit, the intention that it should be business rescue petition. The issue of the fine, what happens in instances where an offence warrants a fine? That is, or rather, a sentence that is, that exceeds 10 years. Again, Chair, I'll request my learned friend to respond to that issue. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I think the response that one needs to have in this regard is the magistrate court is provided with a jurisdiction to impose fines in this regard. The 10-year period is a maximum fine specifically related to transgressions or contraventions of section 213 and 214. And if my memory serves me correct, they relate to fraudulent activities of some nature. I just want to check breach. Breach of confidence and reckless conduct and non-compliance, a false statement that was given, that was provided. I think from a legal point it is sufficiently strict penalty is prescribed, yes. The other penalty that is in any other case or other contraventions of the Act is limited to a penalty of imprisonment for not more than 12 months. I think what one should bear in mind, these penalties that we are that are referred to in section 216 are especially the ones relating to the 12 months of administrative nature, it's not criminal. This is it just contravenes the prescript of the Act. But it's not a really classified as a crime, it's a duty contravention. So the periods are in line with that type of contravention that is being envisaged in the Act. Thank you.
Point on that. Currently, we administer the company that contains penal
time the common law said that there are fraud tests. That could be made in sense. And the status of the convention is an alternative. Now, if the person has been found guilty in the mainland, then civil sentence may be imposed than the one that happens here. But if it's convicted of an alternative status of offense, then the sentence will be limited to this. So, what we've done in some of our instructions is to recommend that this matter will be referred to the National Social Authority to investigate further whether any fraud cannot be taken to court. And once that happens, there would then be scope to move a sentence beyond the limitations of the legislation. Because the common law, unless it's not just called to the criminal statute, which limited the jurisdiction of sentence, but the high court doesn't really suffer from such limitations.
Chair, the next issue, I think it has been covered, that is the future of closed cooperation. I think it's been explained that they will be allowed to continue those that have registered, but once this bill becomes an act and becomes effective, no new registration will be allowed. Financial statement. Section 30, the issue there being all companies must prepare annual financial statement. That issue is taken care of by the omission of the section from line 29 right until line 56. We have deleted those because those are the sections that actually provided an exemption to certain private companies from preparing annual financial statements. So now we are saying that all companies will prepare annual financial statements. Chair, the issue of the determination of best interest. What do we mean by saying that a director must act in the best interest of the company and whether we need to expound on that? Chair, we don't think we need to really expound on that term because the court has actually pronounced and there is jurisprudence in terms of what is regarded as acting in the best interest of the company. So we think this is something that is well entrenched in law and that probably there's no need to expound it at this stage. The inclusion of the Bill of Rights in a company's memorandum of incorporation. Chairperson, again, you will recall that in discussing this issue, we have proposed to in the preamble. However, we thought it best to include it under the purposes of the Act. That is to say that the purposes of this Act are to promote compliance with the Bill of Rights as provided for in the Constitution in the application of company law. Once you do that, we don't think that you should go a step further to require every memorandum of incorporation to now speak about promoting principles as enshrined in the Bill of Rights. We think that in applying or in promoting compliance with this Act, companies would have to take the principles of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, as a matter of course. And that would be. And Chair, I think the other thing that we want to present is to probably tread on the test of another institution that is actually entrusted with the enforcement, with the promotion of human rights and the like.
company has acted in a manner that is contrary to the constitution or has trampled on people's human rights, there is an argument for dealing with that particular issue. But suffice in this bill to say that in ensuring compliance with this legislation, the company must also take into account the bill of rights. So we don't want to take it a step further to say, include it in your memorandum of incorporation.
Before you have, I see a hand by the
thank you, Chair. Just on that comment, whenever the Act will be interpreted by the court, they've taken into account this particular section, and the rest of the, or the body of the Act, of the bill, will be interpreted in view of the purpose and application of the Act, and say nothing in Section 7.
The last issue that I have here is the rotation of auditors. Chair, that issue actually is covered under Section 7. Subsection 4, which says if a company is required to prepare annual financial statements prior to the terms of this Act or any other legislation, those statements must be audited in the case of a public company or in the case of any other company, be audited if not required by regulations, and we have made some proposals as to the criteria for requiring those private companies to have their statements audited. So it's clear from that section that it's public companies who are required to have their statements audited. In the case of any other private company, the minister may, if that company satisfies the criteria set, require or request that company to have its own financial statement audited. So we think that point is also covered. Chair, those are the issues that I have.
Thank you very much, okay. What remains is the secretary by the also wish to comment on the technical aspects of the bill, where there is and or the correction. You said you might want to say something that discussed with your colleagues in the department. So if we can have that, and thereafter we need to read the report, and for us to get the final draft of the bill.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I get to the technical amendments and technical issues that we have to tend to after this process, just want to raise an issue with regard to clause 223. On the last page of the amendment, list of amendments. I think the aim of the clause 223 is to come to the minister the power to amend Schedule 1 and 3 by notice in the cadet. Now, the schedule, or a schedule of the bill or of an act, is part of the act, considered as part of the act. If the court should struck down a provision, a section which deals with, which relates to a schedule, and a section which is declared unconstitutional, and of course, the schedule is also unconstitutional. So, in this regard, we are giving the minister the power to amend an act as such. And I just want to caution the committee with regard to that as well. So, we have to look at another option of dealing with what the department seeks to do here. Maybe the department should just, maybe just raise their concerns with regard to what they actually want to achieve, then we can try and see what we can do about it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for raising that. Obviously, we need to follow procedure in that regard. Department, would you like to have comments?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, you will recall that we raised this issue in our response to say that to remove schedule 1 and 3 and treat them as regulations, because then that will allow any changes to be made to those schedules will not require, you know, amendments to the Act, which will then require a parliamentary process, because those could be changes to particular forms, you know, that need to be filled in and the like. So we therefore were proposing to have those treated as regulations instead of as primary legislation, because if you need to change the wording on a form or a particular section of the form, it will mean you need then to have amendments to the Act. So that was the intention, but we expect the question from the state of Assam was that we just need to find a way of dealing with that issue.
I see that maybe the report was in the recommended response. I see that Schedule 1 deals with homes, and Schedule 3 deals with requirements concerning offering of security. So those and related to information that should be contained in their perspective. So I think maybe we should just end the regulation clause, provide with a subparagraph dealing with these issues for regard and also with regard to information perspectives, and just capture it under the regulation clause as such. So then the minister can do this by way of regulation, because it doesn't really speak to the substantive issues really as such, as far as the perspective. So then we'll have to amend clause 2 to 3 accordingly, with regard to capturing those the idea in clause 2 to 3 and the amendment that's proposed, especially as far as item 1, 2, 3 is concerned. We have to change accordingly. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. I think we'll concur with the speaker. Let us check the necessary changes. It should not be possible that we may have managed to make laws by a shortcut through the government again. Committee Secretary,
yes, Chair. I'm not to vote on the record that I do concur with the proposal for submission by the department around cross service, which encapsulates all things the possession of any reference to the MOA. But the other argument is that I need two other specific suggestions which the department was not responding to. But that the ease of inclusion in the MOA was what I was referring to, because I'm convinced that what is that.
Can we do that quickly and then move on to it? And I'm going to ask Mr. Lamskar, who's sitting down, all members who are here, if we can keep the line until we are done with it. Mr. Wilson left us when he just left us all the necessary Can you speak into the mic and can you do that rather than to
we amended the rule of 30, on the member, we deleted 31A all the way to 33. Line 29 to line 30.
Amendments, and due to the limited time, we could not do all consequential amendments. But
particularly with relates to cross-licensing and editorial changes and such, not substantive issues, and the commission of the committee, I would appreciate if we could have the leniency of attending to those in our checking process and in formulating or finalizing the legal with regard to the changes that have been proposed this morning. Other changes with regard to the expressions, which we have not captured individually, related to the last part, page of the existing amendment, substitution of expressions. So those will be individually catered for. And with regard to the last comment, with regard to the practitioner, the definition will be inserted with regard to that, which will speak to business leadership practitioners in the definition clause. So those are the issues that would like to be in this, has not been addressed here, but those will be consequential changes that we will attend to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Good look. We still have the Cora, Ms. Knowles, indicated that she's in the lake. So what we wait for me is to read the report, and then we'll get that cleaned up first. It will also be communicated to us when this matter will be subject for debate in the House.
Did I hear the date?
The date is the 21st of September. That's when the company's bill will be debated in the House. Good folks, I would like to read the report. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the subject of the company's bill, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 75 bill, reports that it has passed the bill with amendments. Thank you. Mover, seconder, I see Comrade Khatmir is there, moves, and Dr. Ravi seconds. Thank you very much. Good. I must say that tomorrow we are kept open to continue with this work if it was necessary to do so. We won't do so. We'll reconvene on Tuesday when we have the public hearing on the consumer protection plan. So as normal, before we start, we just have that overview, a brief input by the department, and then we have public submissions, people who want to speak to us. Are you fine? McDonald, you seem to be very unhappy that you are not using tomorrow. See that?
No, we are fine.
You are fine with the process. So we meet on Tuesday. It might be worth coming to do the introduction. Zotwa. And Fungai. Okay, I don't want to say the usual stuff. But I would like to thank everyone, members, stakeholders. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, temporary.